Okay. All right. We've been discussing Stephen and his work in the first beginning of the church. And we were talking about, as we began this series, this lesson, we were talking about Stephen being one of those that was selected by the church to wait on tables. And we had a problem that came up in the first century church there in Jerusalem, where there were some who were being neglected, the widows being neglected in the daily distribution of food. And so this caused a big problem within the church. And then the apostles came up with a solution and told the church to choose, what, seven men from among you who were two qualifications, they said. What? Full of the Spirit and full of wisdom. Okay? And they said, we'll turn this responsibility over to them. What was the concern of the apostles with all of that? They wanted to turn it over to these men. Why? Okay, because they needed to focus on the preaching of the word and prayer and so forth. So, leading the church. And so we discussed the whole issue of the people doing what it is that they're supposed to be doing. When we get somebody that's not doing their job, somebody else has to step in. So we were discussing that whole issue of people, wherever they're assigned to do, whatever their duty, whatever their job is, to understand the importance of it, no matter how big or small it may seem to be, so that everybody else can be doing what they need to be doing. Okay? And then last week we were talking about Stephen's speech, and we looked at Stephen, who's brought before the Sanhedrin, who is the religious leaders of the Jewish people at the time. He's brought before the Sanhedrin, and he gives this, he preaches to them. And his lesson that he gave to them basically amounted to what? Anybody recall? Okay, it was a history of the Israelite people, really. And in that, what he did, he basically ended it by telling them, those who were assembled, the Sanhedrin, that there had never been a prophet amongst God's people that they, their forefathers, had not persecuted. And just basically how they have continually, over and over again, disobeyed God's word. Okay, now we come to, and we're in chapter 7, and beginning in verse 54, let me get somebody to volunteer to read verse 54 through the first verse of chapter 8. Who wants to read for us?
What book is that?
This is Acts chapter 7, okay, verse 54 through chapter 8, verse 1. All right, Lynette, but before you start that, those of you who just came in, I do have copies of our lessons for those who don't have a copy of those. Anybody need them? Okay. All right, go ahead, Lynette. Okay, that's enough. Yeah, just right there. Okay, so Stephen finishes his speech, and they are not very happy with it, are they, to say the least? Okay, so If you look on your study guide here, we're looking at the inside sheet there, the inside page down at the bottom, number three there, where it says he died. Okay? So Stephen wanted those men to know about Jesus and salvation so much that he was willing to die and to pray while he was dying that God would not lay the sin to their charge. Okay, that's the situation. That's the circumstance. He wanted them to hear God's word and to be saved. So much so that he was willing to give his life in order for that to happen. Okay? Now, the first question on this section here says, could Stephen have done anything to keep from being stoned? What could he have done? Why did he just stand there and take it? What could he have done? Okay. 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 So if he wouldn't have pressed the issue with them, then is what I'm hearing you say. Would that, okay, all right. What else? Any other thoughts? Okay. Okay, all right. He might could have used one of those apologies that's a non-apology that a lot of politicians use today. If I have offended anyone, right, then I really didn't mean to do that, and please accept my sincerest apology, right? He could have done that, Wes. Okay. Okay. All right. The fact that he knew where he was getting ready to go, you think that, you know, made all the difference in the world to him? Okay. You know, the process of stoning, that was not something that was very unusual to the Jewish people. In fact, it was part of the law, wasn't it? You see? And so, you know, when this crowd of folks, they start rushing to him and they grab him and they start dragging him out of the city, you know, there's a point along that line there somewhere where Stephen most likely knew what was going to happen to him. Okay? Because there was a place outside of the city where stonings took place. That's where anybody that was stoned, that's where they took them. And so as Stephen was being dragged along out there, most likely he in his mind knew this is what was getting ready to happen. Okay?
It says he was full of the Spirit.
Okay?
Terrible things happened to him, but at that moment, feeling the comfort of God with him through it.
Okay. All right. Denise, you had your hand up a moment ago?
He stumbled under those exact. I was talking about.
Right, okay.
And compare that to when Peter was denied Christ. I mean, he could have pulled that. But he could have said, I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't said that. Or, you know, I don't know that it would have actually stopped his stoning, but he could have put up a defense of some type. But
okay.
He didn't. Because he believed this. And like I said, he knew. He said that he saw Jesus sitting at I looked into heaven and saw the glory of God, Jesus standing at the right hand of God. So okay. He knew there was a better place waiting for him.
Okay.
And so I just don't think that choice would have even entered his mind.
Okay. All right. Any other thoughts on that?
Like fire shut up in his bones.
Okay. Can't keep quiet. Okay. At the top of the last page on this, the question there is, did Stephen care about these people? And then the second part, how do we know? How do we know that he cared about them?
Well, first of all, because he told them.
Okay.
And secondly,
he told them what, Denise?
Well, he shared the gospel with them.
Okay, which is, I mean, he basically told them the truth, right?
The truth.
Okay, all right, go ahead. Okay.
And I find it really interesting that the last verse you had her read was, and Saul was in hearty agreement with putting him to death. And what did Saul become?
Yeah. Yep. Well, this is where we're introduced to this young man, Saul, who was part of that whole group. He was part of the Sanhedrin.
Yeah, okay. He's cheering them on.
Yeah. Brian?
Before he went, he knew what could happen.
Okay.
And he was willing to do it.
Okay. Exactly. Okay. How many times have you ever heard someone, maybe you said it, you know, in different contexts of discussing things, you know, people talking about the coronavirus and, you know, stopping the spread or some other issue, a lot of times of safety or whatever, and someone would say, if this saves one life, then it will be worth it. Okay, we've heard that a lot, haven't we? Different contexts, different situations. And so I think, as I look at this, I think of Stephen in that way. That in his mind, it is, if it saves one soul, then it will be worth it. Whatever I have to suffer, it will be worth it if one soul is saved. Okay. Now, we know from, as you continue reading on, and we'll see as we continue on in our study, if you continue reading on in the book of Acts, then one of the things that you see happening is that more and more people are being saved, right? By the teaching and preaching of the message. All right? And even at one point, we're told that a large number even of the priests were being saved, okay? So the message is getting out there, all right? And so here Stephen has this opportunity, could have, you know, saved himself, you know, when he was first dragged before the Sanhedrin, could have very easily said, guys, wait a minute, y'all, you know, hold on a minute, let's talk about this, and not given that speech, not told them the truth about their history. Okay, could have avoided it all. But when someone is more concerned about the souls of others than they are about themselves and their own life, then they can't help but to tell the truth. Now we get into a couple of questions here that really have to do with some self-analysis here. All right, considering what Stephen did and what happened to him and so forth, think about this next question. What is the worst thing anyone has ever done to you for talking about Jesus? Anybody? Do what?
They didn't want to hear.
Do what now?
I've had them tell me that they didn't want to hear.
Okay. Then doing that, did they hit you or try to strike you, assault you, or anything like that? They just said, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
Can you repeat the question? He was whispering in my ear, and I didn't hear it.
Dale, behave yourself. Y'all move up to the front up here. What is the worst thing anyone has ever done to you for talking about Jesus? Wes? Okay. Okay.
And I was like, hello, hello. And they definitely started cursing and saying, you don't get off my foot.
Okay.
Okay.
But now you didn't have an opportunity, though, in that to even talk about Jesus, did you? That was just because they didn't like solicitors, most likely. Okay. Right. That's usually what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You associate them with your whole witness.
Right.
Not that you're selling something, but it's still
Okay.
People that, you know, even we've seen a couple of guys that ride bicycles and that kind of related to either the Mormons, but still there.
Right.
Spread the word, but you associate them with being religious.
Right. Okay. Okay. All right. What else? Anybody else want to share? Beverly? Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Anybody else? The worst thing that anybody's ever done to you, you try to talk to them about Jesus. Okay. I mean, you have something, I mean, people just don't, they don't talk to you anymore. People at work or neighbors or who?
Mostly agility people.
Okay. All right.
Experience of just trying to, especially your family, because you want your
I know for us, and when it comes to family, I know my experience with my family was, you know, my dad, and I think I've told you all this before, when I tried to talk with my dad about studying the Bible, he told me the Bible is a book of poems and riddles. It's not made to be understood. And then he said, theologians study that book all their lives and they can't understand. He said, what makes you think you can? And from that point on, he worked very diligently to try to challenge my faith. You know, he went and talked to the priest, and the priest told him, you know, that we had joined a cult, and he, you know, wanted to try to get us out of that. So one of the things that happened that was, you know, when you look at and I think of, you know, the worst things, of course, we went to church, you know, to Sunday evening worship services every Sunday, 6 o'clock, you know. Well, my parents started inviting us over to dinner on Sunday evenings. Guess what time? 6 o'clock. Can y'all come over for dinner at 6 o'clock? Nope, can't be there. We've got to be at church. And this went on for several, you know, for a while. And then when Sunday evening didn't work, they moved it to Wednesday. You know, trying to get us not to go to Wednesday Bible study, but rather to come over to their house for dinner. So, you know, it was those kinds of things were going on. I think the worst thing of it all was that my father basically was basically disowning me because I had left the Catholic Church and I had in his mind joined this cult and so forth, and so he basically told me he was going to contact all of our relatives and tell them not to come to our wedding, and he wasn't going to let any of my younger sisters or my brother come to the wedding. And you know, if my mom wanted to go, then she could, but he wasn't going to go. He was supposed to be my best man, and so we went through all of that, you know, whole issue and so forth. So that I think was, you know, I've had people in the doorsteps, you know, curse at me, you know, go away, get off of my steps, I'll call the police. You know, I am the police. Anyway, you know, I think for me that was the worst that I've ever experienced, trying to tell people about Jesus. Ann? Okay. Okay.
I can recall worse things, but still.
Okay.
It's like they were making fun because I believe.
Okay. Interestingly enough, okay, I have never, other than verbally, you know, cursed at, as I mentioned a moment ago, I've never had anybody assault me for sharing the gospel. I've never had anybody, you know, threaten to kill me or, you know, want to beat me up or anything like that. I've never had any of those things happen to me in trying to share the gospel with someone who didn't know Jesus. Now, the worst, absolute worst things that I've ever had happen to me in trying to stand up for the truth of the gospel came from church people. Elders in the church, okay, which I kind of think is similar to Stephen's situation, you know, where he was talking to the religious leaders of the Israelite people, the church leaders, okay, and I have lost, I've been fired from a couple of different preaching positions because I stood on the truth of the gospel with the church. And challenged the leadership on what they were doing. So I have experienced that, but again, not from outsiders, okay, but from church people. So my experience tells me that church people are worse in that regard than, you know, those in the world, okay? Most of the time, folks I've experienced in trying to talk with people in the world, they just, you know, make curse at you, or I'm call you a Bible thumper or whatever. You know, I don't want to talk to you, get out of here, you know, kind of a thing. But church people are vicious. When you challenge, you know, what they're doing with the truth. But the thing here, and I think the reason for this question is for us to really look at our own experience and ask really seriously, how far am I willing to go in order to help someone be saved? Whether we're talking about someone outside of the church who's not a Christian, doesn't know Jesus, or we're talking about people in the church. When we know that someone, you know, even within the church, whether they're elders or not, doesn't matter. When we know that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, how far are we willing to go? And that's a question I'm asking you personally. How far are you willing to go? Because a lot of those times, those things are, in my opinion, they are salvation issues. Okay? Denise?
Would you say one of the most difficult challenges you've ever faced, not just as a minister, but as a member of the church, is when someone has to be disfellowshipped? That is one of the, I mean, to me, that's one of the saddest and hardest things. We haven't encountered it a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe once or twice during.
Yeah.
Very often. Because usually when someone falls away, they pretty much
right.
disappear. But when you have a member coming and you know that they are doing something that they shouldn't, and the elders have to say, we love this person, and we will do what we can to bring them back, but they're disfellowshipped. That, to me, that's one of the hardest things to have to encounter.
Yeah. And we've actually done that twice here since I've been here. And that really is one of the most difficult things to do, because you're basically, in a lot of ways, you're, in one sense, you're writing that person off.
Yeah.
And there's that feeling of, I don't want this person to be gone, but I can't allow them to continue to infect the church and possibly harm the church and the reputation of the church by what they're doing.
It's like if you have to amputate a part of your body.
Yeah.
That's what you're basically doing.
Exactly.
And so
yeah.
It's really a hard thing. And I get what you're saying, too, because I grew up going to a Christian school where we actually had part of our curriculum was Bible verses and learning them. So my whole life was spent around religious people
okay.
that may or may not have been doing things the right way. So that's how most of my sharing with people has been.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's harder than sharing with someone who's never heard.
Yeah.
Because you're challenging their lifelong beliefs.
Yeah. Well, I think the worst part about that, in my experience with it, because I've been involved in it in another congregation where I was at, that and we didn't really even get to the point of disfellowshipping the person. It was a situation where this person had come before the church and did some things in front of the whole congregation that were just sinful. And so we didn't have elders at the time, and so we had a quote-unquote committee of men who were supposed to be helping the preacher. And so I sat down with them and said, guys, you know, we need to deal with this. We can't just let this go, you know. And in their guidance and wisdom, they said, well, we think that you can handle it, you know, and take care of it. You'll do what's best. And so I did. And we had some folks that got really upset because this person, their response was not what it should have been. And this person had some close friends, you know, part of the congregation. So it caused a big uproar. with those who took sides, you know, and folks that got upset with me because, you know, I did what the Bible told me to do, you know, with it and so forth. And, you know, ultimately it led to, you know, one of those times where I didn't get fired, but I left because it was like, you know, it was just, I actually got accused of, we had one of the men in the church who was part of that whole committee group and everything. He was so angry at me for what the way I had handled some things, and he had a stroke and died kind of, you know, while a lot of this kind of stuff was going on, and some of his family members blamed me for his death. That's how bad it was, you know. And it was like, you know, they didn't want to have the responsibility of doing what needed to be done. They said, you do it, we trust that you're going to handle it right. And I did handle it right, but the reaction of this person and then friends and so forth was wrong, and they got upset, and it just caused a big, you know, hassle and everything. And so, you know, that was one of those situations where, you know, in the midst of all that, the Lord opened up a door for us to go to another congregation, and we did, and we kind of ended up feeling like we jumped out of the frying pan right into the fire going there, because it was a worse situation. But it just, you know, yeah, that's difficult when, you know, you do what you're supposed to do, and it ends up causing, you know, people take sides because, you know, this is a person who's close to them, and they don't like what you did, and, you know, and so on and so forth. They don't understand the whole point of church discipline, and
I mean, it's a much worse situation. But I kind of feel it's what Stephen's here, because people are listening to him and catching on to what he says and believing, and that's upsetting the apple cart,
yeah,
as far as everybody else is concerned.
Exactly.
And so that's the closest that I can say that we've ever experienced, right, anything like that.
And that's why I say that, you know, I think sometimes people in the church, they're supposed to know better, they respond and react worse, you know, to when you challenge them on the truth than what folks that aren't, they're not religious at all do. You know, they may curse you out or whatever and say, leave, no, don't come back, you know, that kind of a thing. But, man, people in the church, when you go against them, they want your job, they, you know, and so on and so forth. James? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then, too, in 57, verse 50 said, they cried out with a loud voice and stopped their ears.
Right.
So, just go to, like you asked, well, what we should do, we need to start praying about this situation, because it's going to happen, it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to happen, though. You know, so we need to pray about this situation so that we can be faithful and strong when this time comes. And something
Oh, yeah. And, you know, so part of the thing here is that, you know, we need to understand, and we got to know about ourselves. How far am I willing to go? What am I willing to give up and to lose? What am I willing to die to tell the truth about Jesus? Now, like I said, I think right now we have more of a threat, unfortunately, from those inside the church than we do outside the church, but I do believe that the threat outside is coming more and more and more. You know, we're just the things that are going on, we're going to see that happening more and more and more. When you've got, you know, in the midst of the coronavirus, you've got, you know, leaders of states and cities and so forth wanting to shut down churches to keep people from worshiping. They don't mind doing that, but yet they want, you know, Walmart's got to stay open and crowds can gather there and so forth, but churches have to shut down. When we have to have federal judges say, no, you can't do that in order to protect our religious freedom, those things are coming more and more.
You see? In the cars, in the
parking lot. Yeah. And so, in other words, what I'm saying is we're moving more and more as a culture in America against religion and against God. So we're going to see more and more persecution from the outside. Okay? But there's already a lot of persecution inside the church. Okay? Amongst those who don't want to believe. In my Bible study that I have on Wednesday, that's a mix of all kinds of people religiously and so forth. And I've had some guys that have gotten upset and walked out because they didn't want to hear the truth. You see? What do you mean?
Persecution of the beliefs. The Christian belief is being persecuted.
Oh yeah. But you're saying that Islam though is nobody's really persecuting that.
No, in fact it's protected for some odd reason.
Okay. Yeah.
Although that they religion against.
But again. Right.
And, you know, Islam's more Old Testament infidel.
Yeah.
It's a different religion, but they're not going after it.
Well, the interesting thing about Islam, though, is that, again, kind of in a lot of ways like Christianity, because there's so many different divisions of it, that there's a lot of persecution amongst Muslims who disagree. You know, you got Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims that are killing each other because of their disagreements and so forth.
I mean, in America.
Well, right.
I'm not thinking wrong, persecution in America.
Yeah.
They're coming after us.
Oh, yeah. They're coming more after Christians than they are anything else.
Absolutely.
They don't want to hear it, right. And that's really the bottom line of it. When you stand for the truth, as Stephen did, the question is, how far are you willing to go and how firm are you willing to stand on the truth? You see, are you willing to lose a job? Are you willing to lose friends? Are you willing to lose family? Are you willing for someone to beat you up and leave you laying in a heap of mass on the side of the road somewhere?
That did happen the other day, by the way. In the chop zone
in
Seattle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like you said, this is a spiritual war, and Satan is, you know, it's not against, you know, other Americans. It's against Satan and how he is orchestrating this persecution in America, which has been a safe haven, and now it's become, so it's not coming.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know what God does is he turns the tables on like the great persecution that started right here.
Yeah.
It's a good time for the gospel to spread.
Yeah, the church church has spread more in the midst of persecution than it has any other time in history. Right?
But it takes great faith.
It does.
It creates unity because you can fight amongst yourselves, but when you have an outside threat, suddenly people
Yeah.
Everybody was a patriotic American for at least a few months after that because there was an external enemy. Then we went back to fighting amongst ourselves.
Yeah. The enemy of my enemy has become my friend, right? Okay. If we really care about someone, we want him to be forgiven of his sins. Since Jesus is the one who forgives sin, we will want him to know about Jesus. So here's the question. How much am I willing to do so that my friends will hear the gospel? Okay? How much are you willing to do? And again, using the terminology that we've been talking about for the last couple of years now, you know, just focus on someone specifically in your Jerusalem or your Judea. How much are you willing to do so that that person could hear the gospel? All right? And then the last question in this is, what would happen to you if you talked to your friend or neighbor about Jesus? Would it be worth it if Jesus were glorified and/or they were saved? So you think about someone in your Jerusalem that is lost. Okay? Or even, as we've been talking about this morning, someone in your Jerusalem that is a member of the church that's supposed to be saved, but they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Okay? What would happen to you if you talk to them about Jesus, if you shared the truth with them? What do you suppose would happen? You need to look at that. You need to, you got to see, all right, what's the possibilities? Okay? And then you got to ask yourself honestly, am I willing to do it anyway? Would it be worth it if that person were saved? I were able to change their mind. Okay? We really need to be asking ourselves those tough questions because so often it's too easy for us to say, well, you know, yeah, they got, you know, everybody knows about Jesus. Anybody that hadn't heard about Jesus must be living under a rock, right? Because of all the technology we have and just, you know, everything else. So, and to make excuses as to why we really don't need to tell people about Jesus. But the realization is that there are a lot of people who are still lost. How do I know that? Because the Lord has not come back yet. Okay? He's not come back yet. So there's still people that need to hear the gospel. And we need seriously to ask ourselves those kind of questions. What am I willing to risk in order to save someone's soul? Whether it's someone who is not a churchgoer, doesn't, you know, maybe in the past they've said they're not interested, or maybe someone within the Lord's church that you know is not doing what they should be doing. How much are you willing to risk? Okay, next week we're going to look at Philip in Acts chapter 8. We're going to look at the persecution that comes about as a result of Stephen being stoned and so forth. And then Philip preaching the gospel and going in the direction that he went. We're going to look at some things concerning him. So that'll be lesson 5. In this series, all right? Okay, thank you all very much.